For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Survivor Specialist John and McKenna are back, ready to rewind this episode of Survivor. John's internet may or may not be here. You may or may not just have me the entire episode, but let's just get into it. John, your thoughts on the episode before we get into our outwit, outplay, and outlast moments.
I mean, I don't know what to say that hasn't already been said about this episode. This episode was phenomenal. It was a different type of Survivor episode, and I think that's really what it comes down to. Phil mentioned it in the after show with Will right after the episode. It feels like we've gotten to a point in Survivor where we are dealing with near scripted television levels of storytelling. This is some of the best storytelling we have ever had in reality TV in general. Not that we haven't had good stories in previous seasons of Survivor, but the way that everything was planted so far in advance and built towards this moment and this episode, I still have so many questions coming out of this episode. I don't know if the Andy Rachel connection that we saw at the beginning of the season that came back a couple episodes ago and was talked about, I don't know if that was leading to this moment where Andy betrays Rachel again. I don't know if it's going to lead to some fallout in the next episode. I don't know if it's going to lead to some reconciliation and two of them duking it out at Final Tribal Council. I still have so many questions based on the edit we've seen. Genevieve go from being not present really in the first two episodes, then having the big episode three voting out Keyshawn, and that's now the pivotal moment in Genevieve's story. Yes, her big move is the Saul boot, but as we see in this episode where we're dealing with her deciding to disconnect her emotions from people because of the Keyshawn vote, or the Keyshawn vote, and now moving towards this, oh, I actually do need to have relationships with people if I'm going to survive this game. Mm-hmm. It's so fascinating that we have all this storytelling, and we go back to Sam's idol, that we see the entire Gotta tribe find with him, and then him decide, I'm going to hold this until later after the merge, despite the fact that it's expired. Maybe it'll come in handy. Barely get mentioned that's what he did with it in this episode. We get the flash of the idol while they're on the reward, and we see Genevieve changing the idol so that it looks like it's a merged tribe colors instead of the Gotta tribe colors, so they don't just know, oh, this is Sam's idol. There are so many little things in the edit that's happening this season that makes this storytelling so compelling, makes it so interesting to watch. And then on top of that, we have this brilliant plan. It's not as unique as a lot of people seem to think it was coming out of the episode on Wednesday, as we are going to discuss later.
What?
But it is one of those big moments where, and because it has this flashy name of Operation Italy, this is going to be one of those things we talk about in the future, right? As we progress through Survivor, this is going to be one of those moments kind of etched in the halls of Survivor history that people like you and I are going to refer to over and over and over again. And unlike, the Black Widow Brigade, who is our moment for women's alliances and what everyone refers back to, and us going so many seasons without it, I think this is one of those things that does kind of pop up every few seasons and we see it. And the next time it does, everyone will be like, yeah, but it doesn't stack up to Operation Italy.
Yeah, so why don't we just dive in? Our outwit moment is Operation Italy, making alliances and plans to flip the vote, split the vote to then, flip and everything like that. And our examples are not as exact because I do think this is a unique moment, but there are two moments that we're going to talk about where supposed allies or people that you were working with decided to have another plan. They didn't go about it like, all right, we have to make them split the vote. like Andy did. It just happened that votes were split and they were able to create another plan. So I'm going to talk about the Fishback vote in Cambodia, which just so happens to be the episode we're watching over on the Patreon, episode 11/10. They're the same on Paramount Plus, but it's at the 43-minute mark. My wheels are spinning. So episode 10, the second half of that after Sierra goes home. So the Fishback vote is really interesting because he kind of lucks into going home because of these, the way that people are talking in this scramble round. But Spencer ultimately flips on Tasha, Jeremy, and Kimmy, and he goes with the non-reward winners. And they have this moment at camp and we're like, all right, we're going to go for Steven. And we have to like basically make sure they split the votes. So our, what we think is five votes can go against them because Steven does have this block a vote where he, or steal a vote where he can steal Joe's vote. So it seems as if John is cut out. Hopefully he will be back soon. But this episode of Cambodia really works so well with, is he back? This episode of Cambodia really works well with this episode of 47 because we do have these reward winners trying to talk together and make this plan to get out someone on the reward and that he picked wrong. And so Steven just kind of gets put in this hot seat because not only because he wins the reward, but it didn't help that he won the reward. John, I've been talking. What are your thoughts on Cambodia?
Well, one of the big things is that this, like you said, they really luck into this position here. They luck into it because Steven decides, oh, hey, because we have this steal a vote, we actually have six votes instead of five votes. So we don't just have like this small majority, we have enough of a majority where we can split the votes. Mm-hmm. And Spencer was already planning on flipping in the situation, and it would work if there wasn't a steal of vote. And it is kind of this reminder that, you know, advantages being kept secret are really, really good because it pushes it through. And it is a very similar situation where if they had decided to just pile on the votes, similar to what Rachel was suggesting in this episode of let's just pile the votes on Sam, like just get out of here, it wouldn't have worked, right? Like the plan that Spencer was figuring out wouldn't have worked because of the steal of vote. Much like if Rachel used the block of vote, this plan wouldn't work. There's just so many different complexities and layers to it. And I think what's really interesting when we're comparing this moment to what what transpired this week is we get that kind of entitled, why didn't you pick me to go on this reward type of situation between Spencer and Teenie. And Spencer is the flipper in that case, and Teenie is the, well, I could have been the flipper, but yeah, you decided not to even bother trying with me. And it was kind of set up in the episode before where we see Genevieve and Teenie having this conversation. Genevieve's like, hey, did you know Rachel's a big threat? And Teenie's like, are you threatening me? Like, it's just like we kind of get where it goes to, and we kind of understand Teenie's response, but then it goes on just that little bit too long, and they're like, yeah, not sure how I feel about this, Teenie. And Spencer's is just that like brief moment of, you know what, this probably wasn't the great idea because I'm already feeling sketched out, and you decide to take Tasha over me. The interesting thing is I don't know if Tasha and Spencer's roles were reversed, if Tasha would have just flipped or not, because she had already previously voted for Steven anyways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The world may never know.
I'm sure if we asked, we would find out, but we might get some like confirmation bias and things on that.
Yeah, for sure. So this episode of Cambodia, like a lot of things really just align with this episode of 47 with how they break the vote out. John, pivoting over to your outwit moment.
Well, before we get into mine, because I mean, everyone's going to be wondering, like, why aren't we talking the 3-2-1? Everyone talks to the
3-2-1. Well, we just kind of talked Siri last week in the
three two one. Yeah, and like the thing is with that 3-2-1, I made this comment while Phil and Blake were doing Digging Deeper this week. Siri's 3-2-1 is a jockeying for position, which is definitely what Andy's doing here, but it feels less of a power shakeup than what we saw this week with what Siri's doing. Siri's cementing herself in a position to win, or at least get to the end, because Courtney is holding a place there. This doesn't feel like, oh, we're taking, like, Andy is specifically wanting to go after Rachel, and then, of course, like, serendipitously, Rachel wins. And there is conversation on X. I know Sam was tweeting out that, they realized that if they won immunity, the plan didn't work, and, like, they wouldn't be able to make it work. But when it sees that, when he saw that Rachel was the one who was close to winning, it was like, oh, crap, then the plan also doesn't work. So he was pushing a little bit harder, too. But anyways, the thing is I actually lost my train of thought. The thing with the 3-2-1 that's different here is Andy is trying not just to position himself to get to the end where he can win. Andy's also in a position where he needs to make himself eligible to win because of everything that happened earlier in the game. Everything we saw last week, right? Where we saw Genevieve make that comment about Andy and Sue are just people they're going to take to the end because they're easy to beat, right? So because of that, that's where I think we see these differences here. And the moment that I'm going to mention, which Phil also mentioned on Digging Deeper yesterday, is the Winners at War Sophie boot. But it's also so much luck-based and so different because it's not like Tony is in a position where he needs to make a big move. He just wants to. You know, it's the type of player Tony is. Tony feels like that. But for the majority of that episode, Tony starts that episode. It's the episode right after Jeremy has used the safety without power. Tyson goes home in that crazy tribal council. Tony comes back and he's talking to Jeremy, Michelle, Kim, and Denise and trying to convince them that he wants to work with them moving forward, that he's on their side, that they can move forward together. And in confessional, he's just telling us, I'm making this all up. I don't want to work with them at all. I just want them to feel comfortable with me. And then all of a sudden, we get through that big episode. The episode's This Is Extortion, so it has those big moments from Tony. It's the big Tony episode. Again, like this masterclass in editing that we see from Survivor time to time. I think it is a very comparable episode to what we saw this week. And then Tony wins immunity. So someone unexpected wins immunity, and then all of a sudden the plan changes. And the plan comes together because someone wins immunity. And in this case, it's Tony. Tony wins immunity and then decides, I'm safe. I can make a move here. And he then again, like serendipity, the luck of it all, his group that he is working with, the majority alliance, Denise and Kim have gone back to them and been like, whatever. Like, let's just get out Jeremy and Michelle here. And because of that, they all decide, okay, we can just split the vote on Jeremy and Michelle. Like, we'll put 4 on Jeremy, we'll put 3 on Michelle, and then their 2 votes can go wherever we get them out, even if there's an idol. And again, like, this is where the idol of it all comes into play. And this is, I think, the part of Andy's convincing that doesn't really get talked about enough is the fact that production has given us idols since season 11 of this show. And granted, season 11, it was different. They learned that. Season 12, it was also different. And it didn't work the way they wanted it to. Until season 13 comes along and Cowboy suggests Plan Voodoo. And all of a sudden, there's this inkling of, oh, we can split the votes. We can change the way we're voting. We see in 14, people are taking into consideration idols. They vote for the person that they're definitely not going to play the idol for. And then we start getting into split votes and we start getting into people navigating idols and these questions of, does this person have an idol? If they have an idol, do we have enough people to separate this vote? This is why I think the immunity idol, like the hidden immunity idol, is one of the most important things Survivor ever introduced to the game because it led to this type of fluidity. And we really see it at Winners at War because these are people who are seasoned vets. They've played the game. They've won the game. And they have to consider, an idol was played last round. Somebody could find an idol. It's possible Jeremy or Michelle have one. We have to split the votes. And that allows Tony, who is riding high, has just found a hidden immunity idol that episode, got through the extortion disadvantage and had the social game in order to collect those fire tokens for it, wins immunity and is totally safe, so nothing can fall back on him. That allows him the space to then be, hey, Jeremy, they're coming for you. Kim and Denise have flipped on you. Let's vote out Sophie. And it is just one of the greatest plurality votes that we have ever seen.
With Tony getting rid of Sophie, who got really close to Sarah, that like really solidifies Sarah in his corner, because as we see Sarah in Game Changers, she like has an art for balancing alliances where they don't get mad at her and vote her out, which she learned in Kageyan, where she got voted out for that. So eliminating Sarah's other option was great for Tony to progress further in the game and use Sarah, because then he has her on lock. She has no other obligations. She has Ben, but Ben is kind of like with them. So
yeah, and very comparable, because I think getting rid of Sophie in that instance is very similar to getting rid of Caroline here. And no, it's not like Caroline is taking a person away from Andy. That being said, Andy and like I mentioned, we had this big story throughout the season of Andy and Rachel's relationship. Maybe Andy is thinking, if I get rid of Caroline, then I have Rachel as an option. Maybe that's how he's thinking. We don't see it expressed, so I kind of doubt it.
Also, but it breaks up know, Caroline and Sue. Like,
exactly.
We aren't, no one is like, has been pegging Sue for like the strategic mastermind, but Caroline, I think, had a lot of that information flow to Sue, where Sue could do some things about it. So knocking, you know, Gabe from Sue and Caroline from Sue, we're eliminating these duos or, you know, known alliances, where now Genevieve and Sam are aligned out of necessity. Andy and Rachel, we thought, were aligned, but clearly Andy is now, this is the second time he's blindsided Rachel. Sam and Andy are aligned.
Third time he blindsided Rachel.
Third time he blindsided Rachel. Sorry, my bad. And then we thought Andy and Sam are together, but Sam wasn't with Andy in the beginning, and then Andy wasn't with Sam in the middle, and now he's using Sam as a stepping stone for right now. So there aren't really any duos. Genevieve shot her alliance with Teeny in the foot with the Saul vote. So everyone now doesn't really have a concrete buddy.
Yeah, exactly. And it just does to open up the game a lot. I think, again, like if we're looking at this winners at war situation versus this, and I think, again, there's an instance in winners at war where there's talking about all the things that could go wrong. And it's more coming from Jeremy being like, I don't know if I can trust Tony. I don't believe Tony that Kim and Denise have flipped. And like, so there's that aspect to it. And one of the interesting things in Operation Italy is the fact that we get and again, this is the editing. The editing in this episode is so phenomenal, because we get, just before Tribal Council, we get Genevieve explain absolutely everything that can go wrong with this plan. And it puts that seed of doubt in there. And we get the moment of, we see how close Sue and Caroline are, where Sue's like, I'll play my idol for you. And it's edited in such a way where you're like, oh my God, is Sue going to play the idol for Caroline? And then I'm sitting there watching it as we go to Tribal Council. I'm sitting there watching as we go to Tribal Council. I'm like, Sue doesn't play this idol because there's no idol being played. She would only play it if the opposition side played an idol, because then there's that threat that Caroline's going home and they can just ensure that Genevieve's going home instead, or Sam's going home. But there's no need to. And again, that's why I think Operation Italy is so intelligent, and the way, especially how Genevieve and Sam navigate that conversation after the votes are cast, where Sam's like, Genevieve, do it. And Genevieve's like, I'm okay with how it lands. It's not only the statement of trust to Andy, it sows this paranoia. And at that point, I think it also makes Sue so confident that they've gotten away with it, that there is no need for her to ever play that idol.
Do you think Andy can get anywhere in a frank discussion with Sue and Teeny that their only chance of winning is with each other at FTC?
Probably. I would imagine that's probably who he wants to sit beside. I doubt he wants to sit beside Rachel. I think Rachel is, I think we've seen from based on the edit and just based on like what Genevieve's saying and the constant conversation of Rachel since the merge, I don't think anyone really wants to sit with Rachel. I think based on the fact that everyone's talking about Genevieve the way they have since the Sol vote, I don't think anyone wants to sit with Genevieve. There's potentially this moment where Andy pushes like Sam's an option, but Teeny's not going to go for that. We learned that this week for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, I don't know if Andy can push it to Sue because we know Sue is an emotional player who she's out. Look at the way she treated Kyle. And yes, of course, like we never got the Tweedledee, Tweedledum aspect of it in the edit. And we didn't see that he was calling them that. However, Sue hated Kyle. I'd like hated him since he threw a vote on her at the very beginning of the game because he didn't want to vote for TK.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think Sue is going to respond to Andy writing or writing down her ride or die's name?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the reason Caroline goes home, right? Like, I just don't think, I don't know if Andy can get any footing with Sue. And I wouldn't be surprised if Andy ends up being the next person to go to placate Sue.
I mean, yeah. And then it furthers everyone else one step in the game, too. So, hey. And what do we think Rachel's biggest move was?
What do you think, McKenna?
I think Rachel's biggest move was purchasing the right thing at the auction and decide and then also deciding to go put her hand for a rock for the journey.
Yeah.
Those things are kind of luck based. Like I don't think she has a solid move. I think she's a big brain that people are scared of because she could think and make plans, but I don't see what has happened for her to be this big of a threat that people are talking about she's going to sweep. Now, I think she has great relationships with people, and that's one thing that is very strong with her. And she's also not voted out some of these people that are on the jury.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
there's that aspect too.
I don't think we can point to a single big move that is Rachel's. There isn't one, is really what it's coming down to. But she is a social player. We saw the seeds of that. Yeah, exactly like Kenzie, right? We saw that at the merge, right? Especially if we go back to that split tribal council where Rachel's the only person on that 2Q side and they're having that conversation. Maybe we need to get rid of a 2Q so that everyone doesn't pick off 2Qs. I would like to note 2Qs have gone home every tribal council since the Sol blind side consecutively. So there was some merit in that conversation, but again, like Rachel doesn't have that big move. She was saved there by someone else, whether that comes out or not, I don't know. But people will probably accredit that to her social game.
Yeah.
They might not, they might say, okay, this is the obvious thing. This is obviously what everyone was going to do to get rid of the TQs. But like, again, like you said, she got the idol. I think right now, she hasn't done her biggest move yet.
Yeah, I think it's on the horizon if they let her do her move.
Yeah, I think we're going to see it next week. I think that like this penultimate episode this finale part one.
Because the block of vote probably has to be played at 6. And then the idol
has to be. We know it has to.
Yeah. Right.
We know the block of vote has to be voted or played at 6. It's also a very good time to use it in a 3-3 grouping. The question is, do Sue or does either Sue or Teeny decide to flip sides, change things up, get rid of Rachel, plays an idol? Maybe that's the big move. The big thing is, like, there haven't been big moves and these driving forces from Rachel, and she's been blindsided 3 times. I think she, it's possible that she gets there with Sue and Teeny and then like that's how she wins. But I don't know. I think there's still a fear of Rachel getting there. And sometimes that fear is enough to propel someone to a win, right? Like, also, if people are talking about someone's going to win, someone's going to win, someone's going to win enough, people are going to start believing it. And those also, people are going to be on the jury. Counsel
is important because, as many people have said, you know, like Amanda can't do a final tribal council, plays a great game, but can't do a final tribal council. So I think final tribal council does still mean something. And if Teenie or Sue somehow sell something, I don't think anything is like written in stone with this grouping.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. It's an interesting thing, but what we've seen here has just transpired to make these next two episodes so pivotal to the end game. And I don't think I've ever been as excited. I don't think it's ever been. And Phil and Will and Blake have all talked about it this week. Going into a finale with six people and like five of them have a realistic shot of winning the game. One of them might not, but you could still be like, yeah, okay, she could still get over the end or over the line at the end and like it would be fine. I don't think I felt this way about a season of Survivor in a very long time.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Alrighty. So after this long outwit portion, we are going to move into outplay, and that is sleepover rewards. And John, when we say sleepover rewards, what comes to your mind?
To my mind? Well, I think the most ridiculous option. These have been a staple in Survivor since Borneo, right? Like, we have had those overnight rewards all the way in Borneo. We had it when Dr. Sean goes to the yacht overnight and has that like, oh my God, who are you going to take for breakfast? Oh, I'm going to take Richard, even though I said I would take Sue. But the moment that really sticks out for me on overnight reward is one of the most hilarious moments in Survivor history. It's Heroes versus Villains. It's the Treasure Island, the Robert Louis Stevenson house. They're watching Treasure Island, and Danielle and Amanda are fighting over the idol clue and the popcorn. And Colby's just like, damn it, stop it so I can watch Treasure Island.
I'm on an island, starving myself. I want to get away from the game and just watch some goddamn Treasure Island. Let me be. And these girls are fighting over this popcorn, fighting over the clue. And it's my clue. No, it's my clue. And then, like, we were talking about Kelly Wentworth of, like, keeping calm, cool, and collected. These girls do not.
Yeah, it's one of those things where that's what I like about overnight rewards, because a lot of the times with these overnight rewards, there's the split, right? There's the split up. You have the group back at camp. You have the group away. And something interesting comes strategically. The overnight rewards are just this wild card. Anything can happen at them. I mean, obviously, we saw it this week with Operation Italy. We've seen it in the past. What? Some of the overnight rewards we've had where
the drunkenness.
Yule, Ozzy, and Parvati naked in the pool.
Yeah.
We have, again, like this HVV reward where it's just like complete chaos and Colby's just like there. You just don't know what you're going to get out of an overnight reward. And they're also a nice reprieve from the game sometimes. And that's what I think is the big thing about why people are always like, we need more rewards. We don't want the sanctuary over and over and over again. Because I think a lot of people in the early days of Survivor really did enjoy the locational things. These ideas of like the culture bleeding into the game and seeing that. And the sanctuary doesn't feel
overnight reward. It's not my moment, but Africa's overnight reward where like they go to the town and then they, you know, sell the goats and do all the things there where it's like, you're immersed in the culture.
Yeah, exactly. And it brings that other aspect to the game. It kind of takes it separates the game. And I think one of some of the complaints about the sanctuary as a reward is it doesn't feel different than the game. It feels like this is another beach. It doesn't feel like this is somewhere else in Fiji. It doesn't help that we've literally had another season in Fiji that had people going elsewhere.
Yeah. So I'm going to take Guatemala here. And that's where they go to this fancy house. It's luxurious. They eat so much food, sponsored by Folgers. And they, it's Stephanie, Gary, Judd and Danny. They all were on a team for the reward. Nobody was picked for this one. But like in 47, when they got the loved ones letters, here they were surprised with loved one videotapes in the morning. So they were able to come to this like mansion, have robes, their clothes washed, get like just, you know, pampered, which is something that could happen here in Fiji. Just find some mansion in Fiji and then do their laundry. Like, this is something that could be so simple. Instead, they're like at the sanctuary for the majority for it. And it's like, these are some simple things that could elevate the experience, the viewing experience for us, because, you know, we're all about talking about the viewer experience with like challenges and things like that. But that's one thing that we miss with rewards is, you know, all right, we're going to the sanctuary. All right, we're going to the sanctuary. Oh, there's one helicopter. And that's about it. So Guatemala does introduce this surprise loved one visit, which I will not visit this surprise loved one dose. And I almost wish we had that happen in 47. It does provide a lot of like politics with knowing that this is the loved one visit essentially in 47 with the letters. But I like that I like the surprise when they get loved one letters.
How do you feel about the fact that Jeff didn't mention the loved one letters until after Sam had won the challenge?
They've been doing that the last few seasons. I was actually watching this with my fiance, and I was like, this is going to be the loved one letters challenge. Mm-hmm. And she was like, how do you know that? I'm like, I just do. Watch. We watch the challenge, and then Jeff is like, all right, Sam, guess what? You also have loved one letters here. Pick your people. And she was like, how'd you know that? And I was like, it's an overnight reward to the sanctuary. You just kind of fit the pieces here from now these last few seasons where we don't get that loved one reward. So, like, there's going to be some form of love in something. So I wish, if he's going to announce the winner, or if he's going to announce there's love, it is beforehand, because that affects my strategy in winning rewards.
Right.
Because I'm not going to be giving out love. Absolutely not. I'm losing that challenge 100% of the time.
It's always better to lose reward challenges. We've talked about it several times already. So you don't have to make these choices. One thing I've also noticed is that Survivor's gone back to giving us, I've complained about it previously on this podcast, not in this exact episode, but in previous iterations of this podcast, about how rewards have been like that even number spoil, right? Mm-hmm. The even groupings of people going. One of the most refreshing things about this reward is that it was an uneven split of people. We had three, and it wasn't the majority going on the reward, right. It was a minority going on the reward. That, to me, is one of those moments that felt old school Survivor for me.
Well, which is what happened in Heroes versus Villains. We have three people going on the reward. And what didn't happen in Guatemala, because it was like a team-based reward. So it's like you get... well, so was Colby, Amanda, and Danielle. That was shuffleboard, I think. Anywho.
Yeah, it
was But like with this split in Guatemala, you don't have the ability to pitch as well. So like Gary is trying hard to pitch to Stephanie and Judd, like, let's have big threats, bring the threats to the end, and it's not hitting as hard when there is two of them, or when it's a 50-50 split. Now Andy did flip, but on his own choice. It wasn't necessarily because Sam and Genevieve were trying to pull him.
As far as we know, like the editors sort of just hit that.
It seemed as if Andy was like, all right, I'm ready to do something, and it's with you two. So these two rewards, you don't have a lot of that like real strategic talk as much as Operation Italy and the Sanctuary, which I liked that, you know, Sam was picking and choosing who he wanted and for specific reasons. We see it with Fish back in Cambodia. He picks these two people for specific reasons.
Yeah, we see it a lot, right? And that's the interesting thing about the random split versus the choosing people to go on reward. And when we do, like, looking at that Guatemala aspect, right, we have Gary is pitching this take the threats to the end. And we get Stephanie saying, it's kind of like, I kind of get it. I get where he's coming from. It's probably good for me. Mm-hmm. But I'm in such a good position now. And that is probably the experience of Stephanie coming from having already played the game before and mm-hmm. knowing how to give a confessional. And the juxtaposition of Judd being like, why the hell would I do that?
Yeah.
Why would I do that? I am sticking with my people and that's that. And again, that is that old school mentality of Survivor mm-hmm. that's coming through. And it's so nice seeing Andy. I think we're very lucky. Andy is the super fan of the show. And has like the super fan mother and things like that, that he's willing to make this move. I think a lot of people in this position, I don't think there is a single person Sam could have taken in any combination that would have resulted in something like this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it makes sense to take Genevieve because it's better. You're in a situation where you have to pull two people over. You're easier to pull people over if you're working on them one-on-one.
Yeah.
Or like
yeah, and I think if he took someone phase, else, right? I think if he took, say, Teeny, I don't think I'm not sure Operation Italy even happens because Andy might just be like, well, I'll just stick to what I've got and keep going.
Mm-hmm. I think there is potential Andy would have done this no matter what. But the problem is like, there was so much time needed.
There was no time to flush out. Yeah, yeah. There would have been
exactly what had to happen here with the idol and with the acting and how everyone mm-hmm. had to respond to everything. They definitely plotted out exactly how this had to be done. And we do have Teeny in this episode ripping Sam's choices. Sam, I think, clearly made the right choices because based on what we were already seeing in the episode, taking Teeny there is such a little chance that Teeny is flipping to work with Genevieve, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting talking about this and then also talking about heroes versus villains because Colby is like, I don't want to talk strategy. I don't want to, mm-hmm. I just want to watch and have a fun time on this reward. I don't want to deal with anything. While they're really in 47 using this time wisely and to their advantage.
Yeah.
And moving forward with, like, what can we do in this game?
Do you think Colby's approach to this reward in Heroes versus Villains is a result of a longer game where there's more time between votes? Do you think the compressed game here, now we do know this is a two-day game cycle because it's an overnight trip, do you think that the game being compressed is what compels Andy to make this move here? Like, if this was a three-day cycle, would he have still come up with this plan?
I do think that the compressed game aids in his decision for, like, moves and things like that. But I think Colby was never that type of guy mm-hmm. either. So yeah. He's like, I'm on reward, I'm on reward. I'm not on strategy. I'm not at the beach. Where he was, and especially in Heroes versus Villains, right? He's just not on his game in Heroes versus Villains. So the best like thing we have here is Gary. We're just really trying to pitch and solidify a higher placement because him and Danny are both on the bottom. But I think having Judd there doesn't help because Stephanie is close to Judd, loyal to Judd, and Judd is a very strong personality who's like, no, we're sticking with what we've got.
That was final eight of Guatemala, right?
Episode 10.
I'm just trying to think, is that because one of the things that Gary does in that episode is
yeah, it would have had to been final eight because they got split 4-4 for the
yeah. But this is the episode where Gary survives, isn't it? And they get Jamie out instead.
I think so, but not so, due to this conversation. Jamie just does it himself.
Yeah, for sure. But I think this conversation is part of that. And that kind of goes to show why overnight rewards are so good. I think sometimes when you have a short reward that's only a couple of hours away, you can't kind of incept the idea of something into someone's mind,
inception,
right? Inception, yes, absolutely. And I think when you, I'm a movie buff, or like I'm a cinema specialist.
My favorite movie of all time?
But when you have that overnight, you could talk about something at the beginning of it and then revisit in the morning. And because you revisited it, it's more fresh in their mind. They've had time to think about it, dissect it, and digest it a little bit. And you'll get a more raw response. I think that that led to Jamie's boot there as well. Like, I know I'm not giving full credit to Gary here at all by any means, but there has to be a little bit of credit there in conjunction with Jamie, like, you know, being Jamie.
Mm-hmm. All right. We're going to move on to our outlast moment. And Genevieve has been having this arc for a while now of separating the personal and the game and being kind of this hard, cold game bot. So I figured, let's talk some game bots. And we were having a tough time with this specifically because Genevieve is trying to remove that personal aspect, where a lot of game bots sometimes use and abuse those social relationships, where we were trying to think, okay, who has no social relationships or like not many social relationships? So I'm going to go with mine first, and we are talking Tyler Fredrickson from Worlds Apart. He is so, if you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. So he is all right, how much information are you giving me? Okay, then maybe I'll give you my vote. A big kind of play in Tyler's game bot is at the merge when he's trying to decide between Rodney's Escameca alliance or the No Collar Nagarote alliance, and who is giving the information, who's not as standoffish, who's, you know, where is this flow coming from? And he is just very like blinders on what are the facts.
Tyler is the type of person who I would love to play a game with because they're a very predictable person to play with. Because he is so driven by logic. And you see it all throughout. When you watch Tyler's confessionals in Worlds Apart, you'll notice that a lot of them are just,
here's what's going on. Here are the facts.
Here's what's going on. Here's the facts. This is what my thought process is. This is where it's going. It's not like, oh, I like this person more. Is this better for my game? Mm-hmm. And it's not a bad way to approach the game because I don't think Tyler feels like he is to the extent that Genevieve got in this season. I don't think he ever got to a point where he was completely...
Because he did have alliances. Like, him and Carolyn were working well together. So, like, he did have people that had, like, relationships and things like that. But he was very just, like, navigating the game sort of coldly.
Yeah, I think in the end, like, I think this is the difference, and this is what's so unique about the way that we're seeing Genevieve this season, is Genevieve, like, specifically said, I cut off relationships because it hurt me too much. Whereas I think someone like Tyler is, he can differentiate the game between the emotion and the logic, and just goes towards the logic.
Yeah, exactly. He's so goal-oriented and winning-oriented, where, like, everyone should be, but he isn't like Teeny, who claims, I'm an emotional player. He's the complete opposite of that. He is just kind of not devoid of emotion, but just so, I have a path, I'm walking it.
Yeah, I mean, AAM mentions him here. Like, Brian Heidick is very similar to what Tyler ends up doing, just, like, less of a terrible person Tyler is. Tyler's a much less terrible person. But Brian is very similar to Tyler, where it's, like, there is that emotional compact. He is connecting with people, but he's able to separate that from his game. And when we look at Genevieve, I think a lot of people are kind of mislabeling her as this game bot, because It's not that she is prioritizing these logic, the logic over the emotion. It's that she realizes she can't balance the two of them.
Yeah.
And that's what we get this episode, is that discovery of, I have to be able to balance them or else I can't win the game.
So like someone like Tony, who is very game body, and goal oriented, like Tyler, uses people's emotions and uses things like that to further himself in the game. So like, we didn't want to say a Tony for this specific thing because he was using relationships that he had to further himself in the game. Similarly to Brian, I mean, he is the Iceman, the Ice King, all of that. But people were still looking at him like he was, you know, the best thing since the bump on a pickle.
Yeah, that's a weird thing to think about. I've never heard that phrase before.
I'm sorry, my mom has a lot of...
I never do again.
I'm sorry, my mom has a lot of sayings and phrases. Here, best thing since sliced bread?
Sure. But speaking of Tony, I want to talk to one about one of his castmates who I think we've seen go through a similar storyline as Genevieve, albeit over two seasons, and that was Spencer.
Right.
Because I think Spencer in Kageyan, and I think a lot of it comes, and this is the interesting thing I think about Spencer in Kageyan versus Genevieve. Spencer in Kageyan through Cambodia, Spencer is very, you know, I mean, he's abrupt. He isn't making these relationships. I think a lot of that came to his age when he played Kageyan. He was very young.
His famous line of Cass never winning is never going to win the game. You know, like that.
0% chance of winning the game. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And like that is very much a, I don't care about my personal relationships. I'm going to keep doing this type of thing. And that, again, we know in retrospect, based on post-game press and everything, that is in response to the fact that there was an agreement that that group would not vote for someone at the end if they flipped on them.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense. We see him be very game body. Like we talk, have all that talking about numbers and all that, him and Tasha navigating their way to the end of that. But then he comes back in Second Chances. What is this? 2 years later? And he's still young. He's still young. He's not like as he's in fact not as old as Genevieve is now. As Genevieve's 33 now, I think. So he's still younger than Genevieve, who's gone through this entire arc here. But when we get to the family visit, we have that moment where Spencer has emotion and is feeling emotion. And I think it is part of the reason why he can get to the end in Cambodia. I mean, yes, granted, he's also young and Jeremy knew that he couldn't possibly win the game because of that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also because he did realize doing the game body thing. It's really funny because we're literally talking earlier about a game body move that he makes against Fishback that's actually driven by emotion, right? Mm-hmm. Like this is the difference in Spencer here versus the Spencer in Kageyan. Spencer in Kageyan would be like, okay, what actually gets me further in this game? Whereas Spencer in Cambodia is taking emotion into consideration and taking his relationship with people into consideration. And that's where we get with him towards the end of that season. So it's very interesting to see that we have Genevieve in this anti-penultimate episode coming out and being like, I've, again, with loved one too, right? Like, has a letter from a loved one and is like, oh, I don't have friends here, but I should have friends here. My dad's right. And like, I have to be like, and she has the letter from her husband who says, you know, you can make mistakes, but you can change mistakes, especially on Survivor. And we see that epiphany moment from Genevieve being like, I have to like make personal connections with these. And I'm really excited that we get that going into the finale, because I'm really excited to see what this ends up being for Genevieve.
So we have GameBot might get you to the end, but it misses the juries and ultimately they vote for who they like. That is similar to like a Russell Hance, you know, that he made amazing strategic game bot moves, but never connected with people in the way that, say, Natalie did. So that's why Natalie winds up getting to the end, because people feel so hurt. So people on the jury are feeling hurt by Genevieve more than they can see the moves that she made to get to the end. So she's realizing, oh, maybe I try and be human and appeal to these people on a human side. And maybe, just maybe, I might get some more votes in the end.
Yeah,
and that's kind of similar to what Spencer does, where, or why a lot of people love Spencer is because of this multi-season arc that I wish we had more time for Genevieve to like experience this and for us to like really get more of her thoughts throughout it rather than just like a segment here, there, and there. So that's what was what felt a little bit nicer and more complete with Spencer's arc than right now with Genevieve's. I might say something different if she gets voted out or if she wins or gets to the finale, whatever. But, well, she's in the finale. Anywho. Yeah, so I like that Spencer has this, like, more fleshed out arc because he had the time.
At least we have 90-minute episodes so that we get something from Genevieve.
Oh, 100%. I think this would have, a lot of this would have been cut out, or we would have gotten one segment before, you know, Final Tribal Council or before she goes home.
Yeah. But in the end, I think we're at a spot in the game now where Genevieve is someone who can realize her mistake. Can she correct it? I don't know. The fact that she got that content previously, like in this episode, Phil and Will said it, it really bolsters her chance of winning this game based on the edit itself. So I don't know where it's going, but I'm quite excited for it.
Do you think Genevieve is saying it because she has to or because she genuinely believes it? I think both. I think she is saying it because she has to at Tribal Council so the jury could hear, but I also think she genuinely thinks like, oh, I feel like I need more connections. And so this connection with Andy, this connection with Sam, maybe she might be able to play something with Teenie of like, I know we didn't get along in the game, but personally, I think you're great. And that might go well for Teenie. I think Sue plays very emotionally. So I don't know how Sue's going to do, but like Saul might see it and then appreciate the move. You know, there's ways that I think it plays into both of she has to and she feels it.
I think the big thing is she's saying it not only at Tribal Council and in front of people, she's also saying it in confessional.
True.
And I think that shows that actual realization. Like, yes, maybe she's prompted, but it didn't really feel like that was a prompt. It felt like that was a genuine response to the letter she got that we were seeing in those confessionals. And I think that's one of the ways we can tell, is someone doing this performatively or are they doing it genuinely? Is what do we get in confessional about it?
And loved one letters really like alter people's games. It changes them. So it's like, it's so powerful for, you know, just to get a loved one letter. It's the fuel people need. It's, you know, the fire, it's whatever you need at the moment. For Chris, it helped him win the game when he was sitting alone on that rock, you know, or well, that was a letter to himself, but
you know what, everyone should love themselves, so maybe
if Genevieve gets to the end, just hand her the money, it would be such a crazy win. I mean, that'd be it would issue that would be I mean how she gets there, I don't know, but I think there's a path. I think there's a path for everyone to sit in the final three.
Like I said, towards the top of the episode, right? Like we're at a point in the season where I am totally satisfied with everyone except for one person's win. But based on the finale, I could be very satisfied with that person's win too. Yeah. And that's Sue, by the way, if anyone's wondering, right? It's Sue that I'm talking about. But I would be very satisfied with anyone. Like Teenie, I think has a long shot to win, but there's still potential there. I feel like the edit was not in their favor this week. So I'm beginning to think that that long shot's getting a little longer, but I still think there's potential. And any of the three involved with Operation Italy or Rachel, I think they're all very deserving Survivor winners. And I'm very excited to see how this endgame goes.
But before we get to see how this endgame goes, you guys have to watch Cambodia season 31, episode 11. My wheels are spinning. Well, it's also episode 10. Go to the 43-minute mark of that double episode right there in the at 10 or 11 of Cambodia. And then you'll watch the Stephen Fishback boot and not the Sierra boot, because that's what we're talking over on the Patreon. John, what is going on in the Specialist Universe this week?
Or the rest of this week? The rest of this week, earlier this week, Phil and I talked about some top Christmas movies from 1990 onwards. Some really interesting deep cuts on both of our lists, so definitely worth listing that out if you're looking for something to watch this holiday season and you're tired of the same old schlock over and over again. Phil and Will obviously had a fantastic recap on Wednesday. Blake and Phil dug deeper yesterday, and Phil will be joined by Owen Knight on Sunday. I think they're doing it early in the morning to like not conflict with football watching. And they will be doing the predictions and power rankings this week. Owen's a fantastic person and a fantastic guest. It'll be very good to hear what he has to say going into this finale. Again, it's weird. It's a two-part finale. Not sure how to handle it right now, but that's what it is. Then over on the Patreon, Every Season's Matters is wrapped up Panama this week, and they are starting off Cook Islands. So that's very exciting. That'll be fun. Phil and I covered the
Christmas Carol. Cook Islands.
There's the casting perspective. So Phil and Blake are talking all about that. Phil's after show this week will dive more into Operation Italy, and it's very worth listening to. Phil is trucking along through Australian Survivor. We're already on his part six of his 2019 review. Then, of course, we have us tomorrow on The Rewind, talking Cambodia. Make sure you like the video, subscribe to the channel. And right now, remember, Patreon, where there's still time to sign up, get 50% off your first month before the finale. After the finale, like the last one on the 18th, no more.
Become
a patron now while you have a chance. Come check it out. It has never been a better deal to do so. Other than that, McKenna, I guess we'll see you the next time.
Or tomorrow. Goodbye.
If you're running a retail business, don't let disorganized order fulfillment cause chaos. Use ShipStation instead. From running a business out of your garage to multiple warehouses, ShipStation is ideal for every phase of your growth. Save time with one login for all your stores and by automating tasks. Plus, you'll get the best shipping rates from global carriers. Calm the chaos with the shipping software that delivers. Start a free trial at ShipStation.com/audio. That's ShipStation.com/audio.